Welcome, everyone, to the Westprint Sports Review here on Planet FM. This show is proudly sponsored by Westprint. They're based in 9 Pereri Street in New Lynn. Their number is 09827-8531. Or you can email them on westprint.co.nz for all your printing needs. And a big congratulations goes out to the 130,000 New Zealanders who went out on Saturday and got their shots. And, you know, the more vaccines we get, the closer we get to a little bit of freedom and a little bit of normality here in New Zealand. And I don't know whether this guy, what shots he's had, because I know he's fully vaccinated, but it's always great to have him on here. Former All Black, AJ Wheaton. Good afternoon to you, AJ.
Yeah, good afternoon, Peggy, and good to be on the show. And yeah, can only endorse a great turnout by the people of New Zealand to get on board this vaccination. And the sooner we do it as a collective, the freedoms can come back and I can get out and go to the pub with a couple of mates and have a beer. And boy, I'm hanging out for that.
Yeah, well, I think we're all hanging out for that. I know, especially I am, because I actually put on a shirt today. And as you know, in the past, apart from my my lack of height, I used to have quite abdominal muscles, but it was one big ab, basically. So that's quietly sinking. So I don't know. I think it's good for my health, actually. The least time I've been at the pub, I've actually lost a heap of weight, so I might even have to see my my health coach at the medical centre who listens to the show, and I hope you listen in, Doc. But anyway, let's get into a bit of NPC. Well, I started off with Otago 24, Northland 13. We spoke about him last week. Dylan, now, what a game he had. What was some of your thoughts on that, AJ?
Yeah, well, you told that up north there that the Taniwai would be coming out on top, but no matter what Rene Ranger, Rahana did out there in the back line, they just couldn't quite compete. And I must admit, thoroughly be enjoyable game on the Friday. I think Otago just a bit more desperate. I think, again, you know, the loose forwards played well, Lente's always. And Ione, good to see him running the cutter at the first five, Piggy, but Vahakolo and Karori on the wings, they're just a handful, and I think that's where they exploit the Northland defence.
Yeah, I have to say that I was quite impressed with Josh Ione. He really did play a really good game, and he's shown us the talent that we all knew he had when he played for Kings. And of course, Sam Knott had a very good game for Northland, so it was really, you know, good win for Otago. Puts him in the hunt for a championship semi-final. And then we move on to the Wellington 36, Manawatu 16. Well, I have to say, that was a good game. Tane Plumtree, the son of John Plumtree, she's a good player.
Yeah, he's a bit of a hard note. There's always seems to be a dearth of loose forwards all around the place. It's quite good to see old Manawatu out there with Milner Scudder. Just not quite at his peak. Obviously, injuries, I think, have taken their toll there, Piggy. We know he's extremely talented, but very hard to get back to that top of the sport there. But Wellington, desperate to win. They needed to. And I thought their tight five were excellent on the day. The locks, Blackwell and Bird, played very well. But Plumtree, again, with ball in hand. And Matt Cariffy, I mean, when he's not having a party on the side, plays decent rugby, mate. And he is a menace when he gets his mind on the job, and a lot of turnovers, and led by example among gents, and again, Sevilla, all playing well, and they came out the deserved winners.
Yeah, they certainly did, and the thing I got out about that, you mentioned Duplessis Cariffy. He's actually playing some really good rugby, and at times I felt during the Super Rugby season, we'd miss him. Of course, his father Jack played for Ponsonby, and he's a great mate of both of ours. And hope you listen to the show, Jack, because I did have some conversations after the Gallagher Shield final. Did I mention that, AJ? With Jack on on some interests they had with certain personnel with an Auckland. So, you know, I have to say, he's a good player. Anyway, the 53-year wait is over. I tell you what, AJ, I have never seen Canterbury been demolished like that in 40 minutes since, and I'll put it to you, since your mob snuck the shield off us back in 85, what a win for Hawke's Bay, 45 points to 26. It points to seven at half time. And I have to say, really thoroughly enjoyed it. McClutchy, Tuala, Stacey Ely, they had a great forward pack. That man Flanders, who I think in the future will be pressing for further honours. What were some of your thoughts, AJ?
Oh, look, I think they're the team of the competition, along with Taranaki, unbeaten, but Hawke's Bay have had a loss. But they just are a team that like to play with each other in the company. You can see the character. They're well-drilled. They're confident. And don't forget, they're playing without Whakatapa, who's injured. And I think even Ash Dixon was on the sideline. He was the water boy. So they've created a lot of depth and harmony in that side. And you mentioned 33-7 and a half time. I was watching it and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, the rivalry I've had with Canterbury over my years, and I think on a good year when we were flying, I think we may have beat them by 15, 18 points. He is over 20, and it could have been a bit more. They just went to sleep a wee bit in that second half. But, yep, most definitely, you mentioned Flanders, the big boy, number six in the hair decoiffer there. But Connor never plays a bad game. And, I've, you know, take your head off to Inari, the number nine for Hawke's Bay. He's filled the boots of Whakatapa. He's working well with McClutchy. But the back three and Lowe, Fomai and Bissonnier just destroyed the back line there of Canterbury and found many holes. And all led by the front five, they just played so well. Romano tried well for Canterbury. I think Jaeger was in there. But they just weren't cohesive. And they paid the price of a team that really hasn't gelled all season.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. One of the big things Hawke's Bay will be trying to send out Mark Osnes out a winner, because as we all know, he's taken a role at the Western Force, and you know, another bit of coaching intellectual property leaving New Zealand. But yeah, you know, the opportunity is there, and good on him for taking it. But there's pressure, and I'm believing there's big pressure down in Canterbury on Reuben Fawn and Mark Brown, because really, Canterbury for the past two seasons haven't actually looked the same side as they've looked in previous years. It seems to me like it is the home, Christchurch is the home base for the Crusaders, and it seems to be that the strong base of the Crusaders is tending to be further up the island in Nelson.
Yeah, well, but you know what they're like in Canterbury. Their demands on success are extremely high. A great history in the competition, let alone in Super Rugby, but also provincial football. And I can attest to that in my historical background with the Red and Black. And they'll be scratching their heads there, and there'll be a review. And they're not afraid to come out with a knife down there. So unless Canterbury can turn it around in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and they've got the semis. Definitely got to make this. They'll make the semis, but make the final. They might come out okay, but it's a big ask.
I think it is a big ask. I really can't see them making the semis, AJ, and that's no disrespect to Canterbury Rugby. And, of course, we had a bit of a friendly yesterday between Tasman and Bay of Plenty, 26 points to 9. These friendlies have been introduced, obviously, to give some of these teams that have missed out due to the withdrawal of due to the pandemic that's going on at the moment of the Auckland-based teams. But I actually think, you know, this is a good way of giving players that haven't had a bit of a run a bit of a go, getting new combinations as you head towards that semi-finals time, AJ.
Yeah, and it's, you know, to come out 26-9, it was a lot closer than that, though, Tiggy. I thought they came to play. All probably turned around, and Carter just missed that kick from the boot, and it got picked up. Tasman scored, and their fortunes seemed to change. But the weather was terrible. The pitch was wet, big gale, and so it wasn't conducive to running rugby. But, yeah, Tasman, so is the depth of their stocks. Very good. And their front five, I like that boy, Van der Hoven. I thought he put his head down. Well led it by Tomer at number 10 there. And they did enough just to beat a gallant AF Penny side.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Of course, we looked at a bit of Heartland rugby. And, of course, Maha Nonu, 39, and Jose Aguirre, had a place for East Coast, Narrabri East Coast over the weekend, and it was great to see an old Maha Nona on the old horse. But they had a win over Buller, and you know, isn't that good to see players of that calibre? It does. While they may be past their best, but they're playing at a level. It really brings crowds out to the area. It brings, you know, interest on the game. What was some of your thoughts on that, AJ?
Oh, just brilliant. I mean, isn't it great to see, you know, in the outer areas of New Zealand, the coast, where rugby is the life and blood of these communities. And they came out to support it, and why not two ex-All Blacks, Jose Gere and of course, Nona Ma, he just electrifying in his day. But as you say, they're all a bit slower, a bit bigger and wider around the girth, but they've still got some skills and just generated a lot of confidence in the coast, and to come away with their win over many seasons, it was just great. And I'm sure there would have been one hell of a party that night, mate. The crayfish and the
beer
would have been flooding the streets of the
I have to say, when you said wide around the girth, I thought you were talking about us there for a moment, not Mark and Honor, but, you know... I've got a bit more confidence now that the one at abdominal muscle is slowly, slowly going down there. I was just going to say, a bit of a memory about 10 years ago, we just came off the euphoria of beating Australia in the World Cup semi-final, and we were getting ready for what would have been our first final since 1995. For the Rugby World Cup versus France. Now, I believe that as part of that 1987 winning World Cup team, you guys had dinner with the 2011 World Cup team. Now, how did that go, AJ?
Yeah, we did. We had it at the Eden Park there, and it was just nice to get out and support these men on their journey. Great to see us, obviously, or them win the cup for 24 years between drinks. I managed to hold on to that trophy. I must admit, I drank a wee bit of the old proverbial out of it. But sit there in the room and talk to some of these All Blacks 24 years on, it was pretty special. And always remember it. Great occasion. Great to catch up with some of my own players of my own era also, where we're spread far and wide without the country. So any opportunity to get All Blacks in a room, we go back, we talk about how fast, how agile those tries. We ran 30 metres to score, or only three. A few beers, Biggie. It just brought back some great memories, and to share it with great bunch of men I played with, but also these are rising stars. Yeah, pretty special day.
Yeah, and of course, you have a look at the contrast in, and the contrast out of both those eras. Like, you guys were from the amateur era, and of course, these guys were from the professional era. So, you know, you have a look at it. Like, the story I remember from 87 was, and it was may have been after the Bledisloe Cup test in Sydney after the World Cup, was, you know, one of the greats of the game, Craig Green, going to work on a Monday after being a World Cup winner and having to get up there on a frosty Canterbury day just to get on someone's roof, and decided, damn this, I'm out of here, I'm off Dudley. So when you're looking at the two different eras, and I think there are probably different ways of building up to a World Cup, AJ.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally different era. It's professional. We were amateur, so there's a great divide in it, and I'm not one to go into these judgments of what better the teams and the better players. You all have your time in the sun on decades, and you know, it was well documented. I mean, I was driving my truck at 7:30 on Monday morning. I was a contractor, had my own truck, and I can tell you now, I didn't go to bed till 6. You can imagine I'd had a few under my belt, and then I'm at work at the wharf there picking up my load and doing your job. But that's what you did. There's only one of many of others. Some may have taken the day off. But as I say, you just get up and you get on and did it. And these young men have an opportunity now to make a career out of this great game and put on them, and it gives us the opportunity to see what they deliver week in, week out.
It certainly does, and when you think about it, we're coming up to the 10th anniversary this Labor weekend coming up, and you know, to me there were special memories for myself as well too, because I really thoroughly enjoyed that time. It was just great to be involved in that World Cup, and you know, I feel a bit sorry for these players from the 2011 era, because you know, you always have anniversaries, you always have get-togethers, and you know, it's a shame for these guys in the situation that we are that they can't have a get-together in Auckland or Wellington or Christchurch just as one team and have a laugh and have a few and have some memories.
Well, it will come. They will do it. Look, it doesn't matter what year. As long as they get together, that's all they give them an opportunity to see each other. And as you say, it goes so quick that they'll be celebrating... And they have the opportunity, and so they should.
They certainly should. Well, AJ, as usual, you have given us a five-star performance, and I really hope that you have a good rest of the week, and we'll be catching up after Labor weekend. Enjoy your Labor weekend, AJ, and enjoy the All Blacks and their very tough test against the United States of America.
I'll sit down and be watching with a nice rum and coke. Couple of bets on the races, the horses, and looks like it's going to be a good weekend. We'll be piggy.
It certainly is, and hopefully we'll catch up soon. Cheers, AJ. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was AJ Wheaton, and really one of the good guys. Interesting conversation about the amateur era to the professional era. It was good when you find out some of these stories. Are quite amazing. Anyway, we're going to put on a bit of music, and then we're going to have a quick chat to Mr. Noel Barclay. We're going to talk a bit about All Whites versus Bahrain, and we're going to talk a bit of BPL. I'd rather not with the Leicester beating my Manchester United, so we'll just have a bit of music.
And I've been enjoying watching Rory McIlroy, who's just about to win a PGA event this morning, which is good because it's been a while since Rory's tucked one away.
Oh, yeah. It certainly has. And, of course, he's a tremendous golfer, Rory McIlroy. And, of course, talking about tremendous, before we rip into the EPL, He all once won Bahrain Nil and Nico Kirwan, 88th minute winner. But really some great things came out of that game. And, of course, a mark of respect, as we mentioned last week, former All-White Ian Allman had passed away. And, of course, classy by Danny and the coaching team having those black armbands there. But really a lot of good to talk about with New Zealand football. And this, especially with you being a former All-White, be a lot of pride out of this. Look at the performances of Joe Bell, Cactus, Elijah Just. It was just a fantastic performance.
There's so many good stories, Eamon. There was a lovely touch by the management team to recognise Ian Ormond, because if you follow the quotes and stuff that people have been saying, and I never saw him play, but he must have been one hell of a player. So that was great. I think also, what we're seeing is, I mean, Rory Fallon, I've saw a few bits and pieces of him about talking about the importance of the jersey, and he loves it. I mean, it's just absolutely one of the reasons why he's there. And also, I believe that Chris Wood had a speech prepared and talked to the group after they won the second game and the importance of, you know, being together, being a team, that whole culture. So, I mean, that manifests itself on the pitch at some point. And, you know, rarely have I seen a New Zealand team win two in a row and also do it with a bit of panache. You know, we well-deserved some great performances from a bunch of kids, really, plus, you know, Woozy. Really exciting, absolutely really exciting about the future that, you know, what might bring. I know they're looking for more games in November. Just playing anybody at the minute is getting that group together, and pretty exciting year next year, 22 in Qatar, and they've got a sniff if they get a bit of a fortunate draw, for sure.
I have to say one thing that I saw out of this game, though, was it was even, you know, it's the way we're playing. We're actually playing a really nice brand of football where, you know, like, to see a guy like Joe Kempner, a guy that's willing to go out there and have a run, have a go at players, attack them. Looking at Joe Bell, like, take for instance Joe Bell, like, he plays in Norway in Norway's top division now. He's probably rated as one of the best players, and I'll call it right now. I think he possibly will be heading to the UK come January in the transfer window, because I think the guy is that sort of player. He possibly could be playing at championship level. And it was just so good to watch, and just the attitude. And, of course, I agree with what you say, that, you know, what Danny has done is he surrounded himself with good people around him, like Darren Baisley, like Neil Englund, like Rory Fallon, that have given them this bit of passion for the jersey, which is so good to watch as a football fan in this country.
Yeah, like, I mean, and Champness was a revelation, really, in that first half. I think he ran out of legs at the end, but he was Ronaldo. Like, really, in terms of his stepovers, and he just hurt them every time he ran at them. And we haven't really had that in a while, a winger that sort of can beat a man and get across him and be dangerous. So that was exciting. And you're right about Joe Bell. I mean, he's the chatter's going on about him and his next move. And I know his championship clubs have been interested. Let's hope that he hangs on and gets the right move. He's better than that. You know, he's got short passing and he's got long passing. He just looked very, very comfortable on the ball. And I mean, you've got him at the base of the spine and you've got separated at the front. And, you know, young Elijah Just, I thought he was absolutely superb in that game. And the other one that doesn't get much of a mention is Nando Paneker. Left-footed centre-backs are a rare breed. And I think the reason why Tommy Smith's there is to mentor him. He's clearly the future in that position. I thought he was outstanding. It's never been better for sort of men's football in terms of the All Whites, and let's hope that the women's games, they got the Canada towards the end of this week, and they don't come any tougher than that after winning the Olympics. So, yeah, things are looking good for New Zealand football right now.
They certainly are, and of course now we move on to the EPL and the words of Basil Fawlty. Don't mention the war, but please don't mention the score. Leicester 4, Manchester United 2. I'm going to put this out there. If Solskjaer does not win the next two games, I'd say he's got to go. simple as that. And that's taking nothing away from Leicester. When you've got a team like Ronaldo, Pogba, Rashford, Greenwood, you've got all this talent there. What's going wrong there?
Well, I mean, I'm only eight. I mean, I've sort of sat on the fence for a while now, so I think it'll be more than two games. I mean, if you look at the next bunch of games, most of them are unwinnable, apart from maybe Atalanta at home. I think he could go on a bit of a rough streak. He may redeem himself. You know, we got the Scousers next weekend, and, you know, we always seem to get up and spoil the party. But, look, we should be doing a lot better. I mean, I watched the game, and 4-2, you know, was actually flattered us, really, because it could have been a lot more. I mean, De Gea was outstanding, and it really could have been 5 or 6. And we just looked all over the show. Bad decisions, Glenn McGuire wasn't fit. The midfield pairing didn't work. Bruno was off of the game. And he just seems reluctant to start. I mean, he should have got pulled. He's just making bad decisions. So, yeah, look, you know, he's a club legend, and wouldn't want to say a bad word about him, but he's out of his depth right now. And I think the best thing would be if he could leave with a bit of dignity and really bring somebody in who's got a bit more experience at that top level. I think that's probably what's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Talking about the Scouts as well, Liverpool 5, Watford 0, they look pretty good there, Liverpool at the moment. And, of course, you know, Mo Salah, there's still a lot of talk about now Real Madrid are now after him. He was superb. No.
Yeah, I mean, those couple of individual goals he scored in the last couple of weeks were something else. I actually thought Watford away might be a bit of a banana skin with Ranieri's first game, and, you know, they're obviously been getting a bit of a battering, but they absolutely bossed it. They killed them. It could have been a lot more. And that front three of, you know, Firmino, Sané, and Salah, you know, if they can keep them fit and well, they are absolutely a threat. I didn't think they would be. I thought they would be behind City and Chelsea and sort of stuck in with us, but Spurs are ahead of us now, so we're definitely off the beaten track. But they were outstanding, as were Man City on the weekend.
They certainly did, and of course Chelsea had a 1-0 win over Brentford, so they're top of the table. Manchester City 2, Burnley 0, some real, that's Chris Wood's Burnley side, and there's some real, as you predicted, you felt they could be heading towards the drop, and unless they can do some magic in the next few weeks, it's not looking too good for them there. And just some of the other results, and of course Newcastle, new owners, and they're all smiling, and of course Spurs really just were just too good for them pre-2. Just some of your thoughts on some of those games now.
And I think the big one for me was Brentford-Chelsea. I mean, how has Chelsea won that game is beyond me. Brentford should have definitely had a draw, should probably have won the game. Mendy was absolutely outstanding. Yeah, what did Tuchel say? He said that they were they battled for 70 minutes and they were lucky for 20 minutes. And he ain't kidding, because they absolutely got battered. I can't remember how many times they hit the woodwork, but Brentford, my goodness, they looked great. And Chelsea, for a change, didn't look as good as they have been. So that's good to see that they're hanging in there. Yeah, Spurs absolutely ran over Newcastle. I think they've done the right thing, the Newcastle owners. I mean, it's pretty sure that Bruce will go this week. To sack a guy on 999 games would have been pretty awful. And I'm pretty sure that'll follow on this week. And they will have some plans. There's lots of managers out there that haven't got jobs, so I'm sure they'll have somebody in mind. But, I guess a big surprise, too, Brighton getting a point at Crystal Palace led at the death.
Yeah,
keeps them in fourth position. Quite incredible that they're still going. When is the train going to wreck? And it doesn't look like it at the minute. And Burnley, I fear for Burnley. I really do. They look off the pace in all of the games that I've seen. And early days, of course, but early signs aren't good.
Yeah, I have to say that just looking at some of the other results, and of course, big win for West Ham, 1-0 over Everton. So that. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, we said, you know, West Ham would be top six. But, you know, I think they're potentially looking like they could possibly get that fourth spot. No.
I think there's about six teams now. You know, you can't write off Brighton, West Ham, even Everton, although they lost today. Leicester, obviously, on the bounce. Man United, Spurs, Arsenal sort of had a good, they've had a good month. So, yeah, look, the top three, I think, are going to get a bit of a sprint away in the next few weeks. And, you know, trying to get in the Champions League is going to be a bit of a battle for a bunch of teams. So it makes the league interesting, unless you're a Man United supporter. But
I have to say, hopefully there's a bit of light for us next week. So maybe we can upset Liverpool. But let's be straight to the point now. I'm not expecting anything out of. I'm expecting if we get a draw, we might be happy. But I just feel there are just huge issues within Manchester United as. There at the moment, no, I just can't see it happening. They need an experienced manager there now.
Yeah, I think it's just, yeah, it's about man management. You know, so here we are, and you know, 1 point from nine, and Donny van de Beek hasn't been on the pitch. So where does he fit in? He keeps hearing that he's promised game time. I mean, I presume he has to play midweek against Atalanta, but then when's he going to play? We're out of the League Cup. FA Cup's down the track, so you know you got to play people. You got to try something different. And right now, what he's doing is not working, and it's costing us.
It certainly is. Well, I've actually had a quick look at Scotland. Now, the table there is very, very interesting at the moment, Noel, because Mr. McNeice will be Brendan McNeice, our former football correspondent, will be happy because they had a win over Aberdeen, but. It's a very tight table. There's only a few points separating. So at the top, you've got Rangers, you have Hearts, you have Dundee, you have Celtic, and you have Hibs. Now, it's not possibly the best quality league to watch, it's actually looking very, very tight there in Scotland.
A bit more interesting than normal. You know, I don't mind Rangers running away with it, but it certainly makes for a bit more of an interesting league. You know, what are we at, 8-9 games in? And there's sort of five teams, you know, within Cooey. And, that's got to be good. I mean, we don't want to be like Germany where, I mean, Bayern Munich had just beaten Bayer Leverkusen, who were second 5-1 away. You know what I mean? It just basically that says that league's finished. It's over in October. So, good to see the Scottish League being competitive. And I guess one of the highlights for me on the weekend, well, not a highlight, but it was, I don't know if you saw the clip where the Glentoran goalkeeper attacked his own player. I always follow the Irish League on a Sunday morning, and that shows you all the goals and highlights. And that was pretty amazing to see the goalkeeper throttle his fullback and get sent off. And I guess that made global news. So good on the Irish League.
Well, at least they're getting some publicity. Yeah, well, you know what, goalkeeper delight, they've always been known to be a little bit of, well, what did Johnny Giles say, that most goalkeepers, he knows the headers, what the great John Giles used to say about them. He said they're a bit unhinged.
Yeah, he certainly was unhinged, but it was good to see and that was where I sort of applied my trade before I came to New Zealand, and my former teams, Lauren and Crusaders, in fact, Lauren's second on the table, is doing pretty well, so I doubt he followed, but that was probably not the best advert for the league.
It certainly was, and of course, looking back at your career, because you first came out to New Zealand in the 80s, and you played, did he play for Matt Maunganui under Eddie Edge, did you?
Yeah, Matt Maunganui brought me out in 1983, so that was, Eddie was the coach, and we arrived, and it was Northern League Third Division. So I got to tell you that the Northern League Third Division was pretty basic. Of course we went up. They had a few imports, and we went up the leagues, you know, every year, and until they sort of got into National League. So I didn't end up sort of playing National League until I was about 26, 27, because I went on the journey with the Mount and 80, which was a lot of fun. We won a lot of things and. Lost the Chatham Cup final, and that was sort of really where I sort of kicked off.
Yeah, and of course, you have a look at back in the day when you first came here, like the National League, it was basically compared to what it was like in the past. So we've had our Auckland cities and our Wellingtons. You had your traditional Auckland teams like your Mount Wellington. You had your North Shore Uniteds. You had your Christchurch Uniteds. You had your Miramar Rangers. That really was an era which I can remember as a child, where football really was, it actually was a proper national league, and while there wasn't much fanfare around it, it really, you had some decent professionals coming out here and plying their trade.
Yeah, look, it was, and I think a lot of people still enjoyed that year, and I most certainly did. It was great, big crowds, and you know, 10,000-12,000 people at Cheltenham Cup finals was just amazing. I think it's changed. I mean, every team had 3-4 imports back then. I played in one New Zealand team where every player was pretty much British born. I mean, that's not the answer. And here we are, rolling on 30 years anyway, and. Every player is New Zealand born. They're all Kiwis. They're all playing in Europe. They're all pros. So there's no way we can have the National League like that. The National League here has become a development league, where players move on to the Phoenix or the A League, or in Europe and build a career from there. I mean, that's just the way it is. So we're never going to get that National League Newmarket Park sort of syndrome back again.
Yep.
It'll just be a very good development league for younger players with a few older heads, you know, making up the numbers. So it is what it is, and it's a lot better for New Zealand. We can qualify for World Cups on our own right, and in 2026 we're going to get there by right anyway. So at least we're going to be competitive rather than sort of hanging on and trying to not lose. Now we can go and try to win games. So it's very exciting development. It's sort of taken 30, 40 years.
I have to agree with you there, Noel. Things are looking pretty good here in New Zealand for football, and it's great to see, and it's good to see for people like yourself who put a lot into the game. Well, Noel, hopefully you enjoy your Labor Weekend, get a bit more golf in, and hopefully you can be celebrating Labor Day with a cold beer and a win over the old Scousers.
As long as we don't lose him, I think that would still be a win. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the role again. You take care now.
You take care now, and it's great to have you on. Thanks, Noel. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Noel Barclay. Great guy. He does a lot for New Zealand football, and you know, he's very much involved, and it's actually been great chatting to him, especially about how his journey out to New Zealand came from. Well, next up, we're going to have Mark Watson. We're going to be chatting a bit of interesting things, changes to the Commonwealth Games, a bit of tennis, and we're also going to be, we're just going to talk about our memories of 2011, the World Cup. So we'll just get a bit of music on, and we'll just get Mr. Watson on next. welcome everyone back to the Whispering Sports Review. And, of course, this is the time where we have a bit of a chat to one of the best broadcasters I know. He's the man. He's the legend. Hopeless romantic, Mr. Mark Watson. Hey, Mark, how are you going? And I hope you've had a good weekend, mate.
Yeah, very well, thank you, Eamon. Yeah, no, nice to have a decent bit of weather on Saturday. And we, yeah, could do us a little bit more, couldn't we?
And, of course, it was a good weekend. Of course, we were having a bit of a chat. There's been some changes to the Commonwealth Games, which I've had a quick look at. Some of the changes would include that some of the events they cannot host at a certain time due to the pandemic. Can you give us more of an update on that, Mark?
Well, I think the Commonwealth Games in more recent times is probably just starting to diminish a little bit in terms of its position in the world. Look, 1974, when Christchurch hosted the Commonwealth Games, they were probably just a notch below the Olympic Games in terms of where they sat. A lot of individual sports didn't have their own world championships. And so there was some real merit in terms of hosting them, and also, I guess, the emphasis placed on them by those countries participating. However, I think as sport has moved along and with so many things on the calendar these days and money's come into sport, they have become a little less relevant. And a really good example is, say, marathons at the Commonwealth Games. How many of the world's best African runners are going to run the Commonwealth Games marathon? Probably not a lot, because you can only run so many marathons a year, and there is so much more money in trying to win Berlin, Rotterdam, London, New York, etc. And so winning a medal in the marathon at the Commonwealth Games, does it have a lot of merit? Probably not. But we're also seeing countries, just with the escalating costs, saying, hey, we don't want to host these games anymore. It's just getting too expensive. We're not sure that really we're getting the return on investment. And case in point is that Commonwealth Games next year are being hosted in Birmingham, and they were originally set down for South Africa. And eventually South Africa, Durban pulled out, said, no, look, we don't have the infrastructure, we can't do this, too expensive. And so Birmingham jumped in at the last minute. But what a lot of people don't know is that the next Commonwealth Games, scheduled for 2026, no nation, no city has put their hand up to host those. And normally you used to have three or four cities bidding, and you'd normally name a host bidder 6 years out. That's not the case at the moment. So what they've done is they've done a major review of the Commonwealth Games and said, look, hey, what needs to change? How do we make these sustainable? How do we make these more cost-effective? And basically what they've come out and said is, look, we want these to continue. We do believe in them, but we probably do need to just evolve a little bit. So going forward, is the only two sports that are compulsory will be swimming and track and field. And I think most people would agree with that. Huge interest in them. Two of the most traditional sports, arguably the two biggest sports at the Olympic Games. What they have said is that the host nation can host them with other countries. So we could see Australia and New Zealand saying, hey, let's co-host them. And you, as the host nation, can pretty much determine what those other sports might look like. Now, there are 19 sports at the Commonwealth Games at the moment. But say if you're Canada and you're a city in Canada hosting them, you might go, what relevance is netball to us? We know nothing about this. We don't want to have to go and put a whole lot of infrastructure around a sport we know nothing about. It's just too costly. So we don't want to have netball at the Commonwealth Games. We want something that maybe Canadians can relate to a little bit more. And they might go with a state, as an example, they might say, hey, look, we want to have baseball. We've got plenty of baseball infrastructure around, and it's a sport we can relate to. And yes, the rest of the world might not be that good at it, but hey, it's our sport, it's our game, so we're going to have baseball and we're going to get rid of netball. Now, this could be the case for so many other sports, like Delhi in 2010. They didn't have triathlon because, you know, not a water-based, not great water quality over in Delhi, etc. So no triathlon. And so it really just comes down to the discretion of the countries. Now, if New Zealand was to host it, I guess the benefit would be we could say, well, Auckland, Hamilton, Bay of Plenty, we're going to put a bid in. So you could have the cycling in Cambridge. You could decide to bring back rowing, which used to be a Commonwealth Games sport up until 1986. and we've got the infrastructure at Karapiro, cycling in Cambridge, and then we could go to Tauranga Bay of Plenty saying, hey, look, why don't you guys build a new aquatic centre? You host the swimming. Auckland, well, we need a decent stadium. Let's build the track and field stadium, and then let's just rely on convention centres and existing infrastructure to host things like table tennis or whatever sports we choose. There's also an encouragement, too, to get younger athletes involved and to capture this young market. Things such as skateboarding, BMX, you know, like we saw at the Olympic Games. And now to the purists, they'll be cringing. But look, I've got two young kids. My daughter plays netball. My young guy plays soccer. But my little guy and my daughter's, you know, quite a conservative little kid, mad keen on his skateboarding. And so it's not something I sort of can particularly relate to because I'm more of a traditionalist. But we can't ignore what that younger generation are into. And we need to make sure we cater for them or otherwise the sport is going to become irrelevant. So, yeah, some interesting changes for the Commonwealth Games. But it's all about being cost-effective. It's all about trying to still make them relevant. And the other big noticing point was no Games Village. So you wouldn't necessarily have to have a Games Village. You wouldn't have to go and build accommodation for 5,000 people and then look to sell those apartments on. You could simply say, well, look, if we're going to have rowing in Karapiro, you'd tap into the accommodation into the Hamilton-Cambridge region, cycling the same. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what they've recommended. I think Commonwealth Games are still to become relevant.
I have to agree with that, Mark, because I think, let's say Auckland said, oh, we want to host the Commonwealth Games, well, I don't think the interest would be there. Let's say if, say, New Zealand was, say, take for instance, like we've got the 2023 Women's Football World Cup and we want to be involved in that. That probably would spark more interest if we were involved in, say, co-hosting, say, a Men's Football World Cup with, say, someone like Australia. Plus, some of the sports, like I'm a traditionalist like you are, we're probably going to be called boomers, but I'm not into all this e-sport and that. But then you have a look at the younger generation, that's what they want, and we are in changing times, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you know, older people and people in New Zealand can relate to a thing like lawn bowls, but younger people are going to go lawn bowls versus skateboarding versus, you know, trickery on a BMX bike, you know, and so you've got to weigh that up. And then you've got to look at it commercially as well. But I think it's more about just trying to reduce costs. It's a really interesting one. But look, this whole thing too, where I can see the next big storm too coming is that, and I sort of get it, but there is this big thing now globally around the damage that, say, colonisation has done to the world, and there's a lot of merit in it, you know. Coming in and the impact that it had on countries like India, the impact it's had on, say, the Māori population here and stuff. And so you're going to start to sort of see this whole world Commonwealth. Is that going to end up being a word associated with history which benefited some but has been devastating to a lot of countries? And so this whole thing around the Commonwealth, this whole thing around Great Britain, colonisation, you know, at what point does that become an argument? And look, I think there are some relevant arguments to it. I don't agree with everything said on those subjects, but, you know, some real challenges going forward for anything. I think that comes back to, colonisation, British rule, and anything that's symbolic of that. You know, we're already starting to see, you know, certain things in history being sort of pulled down or people sort of saying, look, let's not celebrate these things as heroes because, you know, there's been a lot of devastation done through it.
Yeah, and I think you've definitely hinged on a point there. I think what we used to see, you know, it's fantastic because we're around a similar age in our early 40s, and we remember things growing up in school where you would remember parts of the history, but I now think there is now a different history. Hey, I tell you what's caught my interest, Mark, has been Cameron Norrie. Now, anyone who doesn't know who Cameron Norrie, he is ranked 26th in the world. He's ranked the second best Great Britain player on the circuit. He's born in South Africa, but he was raised in New Zealand. He went to the New Zealand Junior Development Program. He left here when he was 16, 17, decided to put all its... decided to go in Great Britain. Now, to me, this is a real concern, Mark, because, you know, like, as I said to you on the email, we haven't had a top 100 player in either men's or women's in the last 15 years. The last time we had a men's single player in the top 100 was Brent Stevens, and that was back in the 90s. I believe that tennis, as it comes to stuff like high performance, it's now tended to be a bit of more like a relaxation sport, a get-together. There doesn't seem to be that great competitiveness which we used to have in New Zealand tennis.
Yeah, Norrie's an interesting story, isn't he? You're 100% correct, born in South Africa, played most of his tennis here as a junior, and ranked high. I think he was, 10th or 11th in the world as a junior. And as you said, he's about to become Britain's number one after this weekend, into the final of a pretty big tournament. Look, what I think the message here is that I think it should give New Zealand tennis some hope that they've got to put a program in place which is going to allow junior tennis players to make a step up to the senior ranks. And we can say that a lot of sports in New Zealand. We're really good juniors, but we struggle to then take that step up. And so I've always said this. Norrie's proven that if you can go overseas, get into a different system, throw some money at it, you can make it. And so, you know, what are we doing with our kids now that are 14, 15? Well, we're keeping them here, aren't we? We send them on the odd trip and we rely on mum and dad to try and sort of get them around the world. We need to have some sort of facility in Europe. We need to throw more money into tennis if we are serious. Or we need to tap into the British model and say, hey, can we piggyback off the back of what you're doing? We like what you did for Cameron Norrie. The difference is, we want to bring through some players here. We're happy to help subsidise. We're happy to help fund it. But we ultimately want them to retain their New Zealand citizenship. So, look, if a guy who's developed his tennis game predominantly here in New Zealand can go on and become top 20 in the world, then I think we're still capable of doing it. But we clearly can't take them to that next step here in New Zealand. We need to have some sort of infrastructure at that sort of 16, 17, 18 year of age level based in Europe. But again, then you get these sort of all these sort of moral dilemmas about taking kids out and putting too much pressure on them. And so what the solution is in terms of getting another Brett Stephen, I'm not sure, but I think we should take some hope out of the fact that Cameron Norrie has broken and will break into the top 20 after, well, as of tomorrow UK time, and that it can be done. Let's look at how he's done it, and then let's see, hey, how can we replicate it? How can we take ownership of it?
Yep, absolutely agree with you. And also, probably what tennis needs in this country is, you know, without sounding rude here, is they actually need somebody with a bit of dough in there that's actually got an interest in tennis, sort of like, you have a look at like what Sir Colin Gilltrap has done for New Zealand motorsports. We need like a Sir Colin Gilltrap involved in something like this, or even a millionaire like, say, Sir Owen Glenn, just to back that, so that we can get back up to that level. We can find a player in the next 20 years that can break that glass ceiling of a top 100 player.
Yeah, we also have to make sure that we identify those kids that are really, really tough mentally, that really do want this. It's a fairly affluent sport, and you've got a lot of parents in the background who, I think, live vicariously through their kids. And you've got to be careful that you're not just taking kids who have been given everything who are good, but because they've been given everything, yeah, they're just a little bit mentally soft. So you've got to make sure that you've got tennis right through all the regions. You've got to make sure you're playing tennis in all the small towns. And you've got to just find that one kid that's got the talent but also just has that sort of head like granite that's going to make it no matter what. Then you get the succession plan going. And I just wonder how much tennis is actually doing to try and get into those smaller centres, get into sort of everyday type schools, rather than everything just sort of tending to be focused on those sort of more affluent areas of the big cities.
Yeah, and I tend to think that, you know, like, I suppose when we look back in the era, it's like tennis has become an elitist sport in New Zealand, and we're where maybe tennis, where some of the tennis associations aren't going around to some of these areas and identify and say that, say some of the kids from lower economic deciles, where you probably would have a kid that probably fought all his way to get where he is. And, you know, that's where I think some of the tennis associations need to start looking at. Just thinking about this, Mark, you know, this time 10 years ago, we were celebrating a victory over Australia, getting prepared for another Rugby World Cup final. And what were some of the memories you remember of that Rugby World Cup? Were you at Radio Sports then, or when did you start after that?
Yeah, no, I was at Radio Sport then, so we were broadcasting down at the Viaduct, and I was often doing a lot of the lead-up shows to then taking the live broadcast. So if the All Blacks were playing at 6 o'clock, as an example, I'd normally be doing the show between 5 and 6, heading up to it, counting down to it. So fond memories of it. I remember going to the very first game against Tonga, All Blacks Tonga at Eden Park, and going with my mum, actually. We did the walk from the Viaduct in Auckland up Queen Street, and then round through K Road and through Newton Gully and to Eden Park, and it was good to do that. Didn't have great seats, but do remember sort of the opening ceremony and the All Blacks eventually beating Tonga. But there's some wonderful games. I always remember Ireland beating Australia in one of the pool games, which was fantastic, and then Sam Warburton being sent off early in that semi-final against the French, Wales versus France. I always just remember also seeing just how well the games presented themselves around the country, and they were smart in taking teams like the United States to Nelson and taking Scotland down and making a lot of their games down in Southland and Dunedin, and sort of regionally basing these sides based on, you know, history or where they might feel towns and stuff could adopt these particular countries. Pretty ugly World Cup final. Probably it didn't go the way I think New Zealand was hoping it would go, and we were probably lucky to win it, but we did win it, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I have to say one thing. One of my memories of the World Cup, and, you know, just thinking about it as average day Kiwi, was it's probably the first time I've probably seen, probably since probably 1995, was we had a real sense of nationalism. We, you know, the whole country was really on edge, and we're hoping we were going to win it. And also, I think I felt that the way the organisation was done, I felt it was fantastic. And of course, you know, it didn't, as tournaments go, they don't go to script. But when Ireland beat Australia, I was fortunate to get a ticket off someone for $50, and I actually had a fantastic night. And I think the people were quite upset when Ireland went out of the World Cup, especially a lot of Auckland bar owners.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's difficult to dislike the Irish, isn't it? I think it's difficult to dislike the Welsh too, if you're sort of New Zealand rugby fans. I think everyone hates the English. Everyone was quite happy they were partying down in Queenstown when and talking the talk and then not walking the walk. But the World Cups are always interesting, isn't it? There's always those teams that get on momentum. There's always those upsets. Not to the same level as maybe in football, but certainly I think we are starting to see, greater depth since the first World Cup back in 1987, and yeah, bring on the next one, I say.
I'll say that again. Well, I have to say, Mark, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and not much planned for the week.
No, a little bit of running, a little bit of biking, just waiting for this announcement at 4 o'clock. Can't see much changing, to be honest, so yeah, pretty frustrating. Local sports events around the country, and let's just hope that some of those things are considered when they do make these decisions.
Certainly does. Well, I have to say, and also happy birthday for tomorrow, champ, and thanks a lot for coming on as per usual.
No worries, mate. Looking forward to my 21st tomorrow, mate.